Welcome back to the Trees and Nylon podcast. I am your host, Trees and Nylon, and I am joined today by the master of the written word, New York Times best-selling author, eventually. It is Blair Kemp. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast today.
Yeah, of course.
Blair, for anyone who might not know who are you? What do you do? What's your whole deal? What are you doing in my house? What's up?
I live in New York. I'm from Maine originally. Moved here a couple years ago. I make bags, I guess. I do a lot of sewing. Okay. And I recently put out a magazine. Mm-hmm. It's like an outdoor-related magazine. I was doing for a while. I had newsletters, physical newsletters that I would make just to send out in orders and give out to people and send around and stuff. And then with the most recent one I was trying to put together, it kind of spiraled a little bit, and I had too much stuff, and I decided to try to make a magazine. I've kind of been obsessed with magazines for a little while, and tried to put one together, and now there's a magazine on top of all the backpacks and bags and sewing and working a regular job. Now there's a magazine too.
Wow. What is the company that you sew for?
It's brand name. FSP Outdoors. Wonderful. And that is, I do all the sewing. I get help with a lot of stuff, design and photography and things like that, but all the production of all the bags is just me. I sit upstairs from a photo studio and sew little bags all day.
That's beautiful stuff, man. That's wonderful. So obviously there is a connection to the outdoors with these bags. You know, they're hiking bags, they're fanny packs, you know, they're outdoor gear, they're chalk bags. But this show, the Trees and Nylon podcast, is about trees being outdoors, and also nylon being clothing, and in your case we can talk about bags and your company as well. So which one do you want to start with, trees or nylon?
Let's start with trees. I was just in the trees, so that might be easy to talk about.
Sweet. Well, hold on for a second, all right? Because we're going to be working through it in a past, present, future progression with these topics. So yeah, tell me a little bit about getting started going outside. You said you moved from Maine.
I grew up in Maine, pretty deep in the woods in a really small town, like in the Western Mountains.
Awesome.
There's like, it's really in the woods. The only industry is logging. Everyone is like a logger. And there's a ski resort up there too. It's pretty close to Canada, and there's a lot of mountains around. But when I was a kid, I didn't really give a shit. Can you swear on this?
Okay, have at it, man. Have at it.
Yeah, I didn't care about the mountains at all. I was like, I skied growing up. When I was really young, I did like ski racing stuff.
Oh.
And then kind of, it's pretty competitive up there, and I kind of like phased out of that because it gets like very intense, and you have to like, to be competitive at a certain point, you have to like go to a special high school.
And, oh, wow.
It's like, but I didn't do any of that. I was I went to the regular high school. And so at that point, when you're a kid, you can compete, but then when everyone else goes to the high school where they train all day and then they go to school at night, it kind of like, you fall off pretty quick. So then I kind of got out of that and had no interest in outdoors stuff. Like, I just wanted to skateboard, and I would go to the city any chance I get that was like anywhere from like 2 to 4 hours away to see like music shows and stuff. So when I was a kid, when I was a real little kid, I was just like running around in the woods all the time. But then as a teenager, was definitely trying to get away from the mountains as much as I could.
Yeah. You rebelled. You got out of the woods.
I got out of the woods for sure. But now back in the woods.
It's called you. Once again, nature has called you.
Yeah.
Wonderful. So you went through your rebellious phase where you said, I don't care about this shit. I want to go skateboarding. I don't even care about skiing anymore. I just want to skateboard. And then you came around, and now that you're moved out of Maine and you're no longer around the nature all the time, what's your schedule like getting out into nature these days?
Well, now I live like 30 minutes away from Rockaway. So I go to the beach a lot. A couple times a week, I'll like go to the beach and surf in the early in the morning. So that's like my closest thing to nature. And then a couple times a year, I'll do like a big trip. I mean, I got back into doing outdoor stuff when I still, like, even after I moved from where I grew up into the city in Maine, and then I lived there for like 10 years. And when I was living there, that's when I started getting into hiking and backpacking and camping and stuff.
Nice.
And now in New York, yeah, it's mostly surfing. I just got back from Maine and I just did a 20-mile overnight backpacking thing.
Wow. That's crazy.
I got back like an hour ago.
Well, thank you for coming on the podcast before you even showered.
Yeah. Well, I stayed. So we got out of the woods at like yesterday at like 7 p.m. And then drove a couple hours from up there where we're camping back to the city in Maine. And then I stayed the night and then left early in the morning to come back to New York.
So you're at least somewhat civilized again, you know?
Yeah, I had a shower.
That's good. That's good to hear.
Yeah.
Awesome, man. And so you mentioned the surfing. You mentioned just going on your backpacking trip. How often are you doing that these days?
With the backpacking stuff, a couple times a year, probably.
Nice.
But
and those are, I mean, this, how long was that trip? Like 2 days, 3 days?
Yeah, it was 2 days. So the first day, it was just pouring rain.
Oh, geez.
Like, we got out of the car. We started hiking at like 9, and we had a car at the beginning and a car at the end. So we couldn't we got dropped off at the beginning. It was the hike we did was where I grew up.
Oh, nice.
Like a hike that I've never done yet. It's like a part of the Appalachian Trail that goes through there. It's called the Bigelow Traverse.
Sweet.
So we like went up to my mom's house, and then she dropped us off at the start of the hike, and we left our car at the end of the hike. So she dropped us off, and then we kind of just had to go. But we went like 6 miles the first day, just in the pouring rain.
Huh. How do you handle that as a backpacker? Like, what do you do? Cause you're just everything's getting wet, right? 6 hours in the rain.
I had an umbrella.
That's it. You had an umbrella for backpacking?
Yeah, like from the deli.
Okay.
But it was so there's three of us, and so for the first like probably like 4 or 5 miles, I had an umbrella and I was like pretty dry. Everyone else was like miserable. They were like trying to figure out how to go down. One person was like, we got to hike this whole fucking thing in one day. He's like, I'm not stopping miles. When I'm wet. Yeah. He was like,
yeah,
we had it calculated. We were like, if we kept our same pace, we'd get out at like 3 a.m. And he was like, we got to just go through all of it. He's like a runner guy.
Okay.
So he was like, yeah, let's just go the whole thing.
He's got the endurance for it, it seems.
Yeah, and I was like, I was kind of dry under my umbrella. So I was like, man, we got to just camp. Like, we can camp, set up the tents, like dry out in there. And it wasn't supposed to rain the next day. But then once we were like up at the top of the first peak, it was so windy that I got soaked too, just standing up there for like a minute. It was like raining completely sideways. But then after like 6 or 6.5 miles in, we found there was like a lean-to spot.
Oh, nice.
So we just like went in the lean-to, got there at like 2 p.m. or something, and just chilled in the lean-to all day. Just like laid our shit out, ate a bunch of food, sat in our sleeping bags, just talked. And then we like slept through the night and then woke up in the morning and it was nice out. So then.
Oh, wonderful.
But then we had to go like 14 miles the second day. So it was kind of a push on the second day to get through it. And the second day was like 85 and sunny.
Oof.
So it was like opposite end of the brutal spectrum.
And is there not a lot of cloud coverage up there? Because I would assume, you know, you made it out the woods. All right. We all know that. But
yeah, we
up
survived.
In Maine, is there a lot of cloud or a lot of tree? Because I went to Acadia last year, maybe.
Oh, cool.
And there was, I mean, a lot of trees. It was very beautiful trees, but I don't know. Then I see like pictures of all the Appalachian Mountains there, and I'm like, damn, there's not a lot of trees up there at all.
Yeah, like you're in the trees. Like this one was a lot of up and down, so there's like a lot of elevation. So
okay,
you kind of go back and forth. You like pop out up on the top, and you're on the ridge line for a little bit, and you kind of go back in the trees, and you just a lot of up and down. So you,
okay,
but there was parts of it that were above the tree line. So we were in the sun, and we found a nice cold river on the way down to sit in for a while.
Bring your umbrella out for the sun as well, you know.
I know. It was pretty cooked after the first day of dragging it through all the pine trees and stuff. Yeah. It was a little beat up.
Mary Poppins, of course.
Yeah, it did the job.
It did the job. I just imagine you getting into the lean-to after that day. You know, you put your Mary Poppins umbrella away and you pull out your bag and you start pulling like TVs and mattresses and stuff out of it just for fun.
Dude, I wish. Would have had more to do. But yeah. Everyone, like when we left the car and I popped my umbrella open, everyone was like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, you're going to bring an umbrella? And then like 4 miles in, they were like, yeah, you're fine under the umbrella, but we're trying to get out of here. Like everyone's jealous of my umbrella.
That's crazy. Maybe that's the new meta. Maybe umbrellas on hikes is the new meta.
I've seen them before. There's someone that makes like a Dyneema umbrella.
Really?
I think people use it a lot in the desert to like, as like a sun cover. But I mean, if it's raining and you're just hiking on, it was rough, like going through all the trees and there was a lot of scrambling you had to use your hands for and stuff. So I had it like tucked into my chest strap.
Yeah.
But I think it's out there. People use them.
Yeah. I'm seeing Z-Pax makes a Dyneema Lotus UL umbrella. It's out of stock, but it's $45.
See, not bad.
Not bad at all. That's so funny. I've never even heard of that. Because you'd think, like, logically, you wouldn't want to be holding something up while you have this giant backpack on, you know?
Yeah. But
it works.
Something. It
hey,
works.
Maybe next bag, maybe you get, like, an umbrella holder for the backpack and you just put it up there.
Yeah. Or I can make one of those hats with the umbrella on
top. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Full clown style.
Rebrand it, put the Gore-Tex logo on it.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, that one's free. The next one's going to cost you.
Yeah. So yeah, so that was my most recent time in the trees. We're supposed to do later in the summer, we're doing like a canoe trip in the Adirondacks too.
Ooh.
It's like all these like chain of ponds that are canoe access only, no motorboats.
Yeah.
So you just like rent a canoe up there and you just like, it's super easy. You can bring tons of shit, just like big camp stoves, and we'll make like pasta dinners and just kind of like
so cool.
Canoe out a couple miles. You have to do a couple like portages, but they're pretty easy. They're all flat, so it's not bad to like drag tons of gear. And it's kind of fun to do like the opposite, like go out with nothing, pretty lightweight, and then just really just bring tons of gear out on this lake. And then you just like swim and paddle. There's like little, you can paddle out and then do like day hikes and stuff, and pretty good spot.
That's on my list of things that I just like to do is portaging or just doing like canoe trips out, you know, because we don't have a lot of water here in Georgia unless you're out by the beach. So we don't have that kind of the luxury of that kind of river system or lake system. But I know obviously up north, Michigan, Maine, that whole area has stuff like that. So I think that'd be cool.
I think Michigan, what's that place? There's like some park
think what it's called.
Some waterways thing that looks really cool. But the upstate New York one is definitely not as extensive as that, but it's just sick that you can be out there and there's no motorboats. It's just like super silent. It's all first come, first serve campsites, like all around these little ponds.
Oh, that's awesome.
And they're pretty separated too. So you're like not around anyone.
What are the mosquitoes like?
On the lake?
Yeah.
Sometimes they're brutal. On this trip, we were just on, it was like no mosquitoes at all, really. When we were sleeping, it was my first time just not sleeping in a tent, actually. My first time like sleeping just in the lean-to on the mat in the sleeping bag.
Interesting.
And it was kind of hot, and I kept having my arm and leg out of the sleeping bag, and then I'd wake up to like mosquitoes biting me. But they weren't like swarming. So
yeah, you got to get that bug net up.
I know, the bug net over the sleeping bag.
Mm-hmm.
Just drape the whole thing over it.
Yeah. I'm about to get a bug net for my hammock because I enjoy the hammock setup. I might, if I'm going to get a bug net, I might as well just invest in a Hennessy hammock, honestly. just because I'm an Eno guy just from birth. I was like in a young adult novel, I was crowned an Eno person instead of a Hennessy person. But if I'm going to get a bug net, I might as well just go in and get the whole setup, you know, because it comes with it. I already have an underquilt. So
do you put the mat inside the?
I do put a sleeping pad inside. Yeah. I like that.
I've never done it. I have a friend that always just does a hammock when we go, but yeah. I've never tried sleeping in one. There was a while when I like lived in this shed behind someone's house in Maine and I slept in a hammock, but it was like a net hammock, not like an nylon hammock. And it was just comfy in there kind of.
Nice. Yeah. With nylon, the big thing is you want to give like a 45 degree angle for the straps. Mm-hmm. So that's like a nice hang. And then you lay in it diagonally.
Oh, which so sounds it makes weird. It more flat.
Yeah. So you're making yourself flat across the hammock.
Gotcha.
And also I think they say keep your, I'm going to butcher it. Keep your feet above your head.
Really? I hate that when you set up a tent and you feel like you're laying upside down. It always like dry. I always like move the tent around when I feel like that.
Yeah.
Or I'll just flip around to the other side.
Yeah. The foot should be higher than the head. Because if it's not that way, then you'll slide towards the center. Because your weight will be up here and you'll slide in. And that's how you get like a sore throat because you get like a nasal drip that won't go away. So you get a sore throat from that. Yeah. Which is a big problem I had.
Really?
Mm-hmm. First time.
Do you have to sleep on your back?
No. And I'm not a back sleeper. I'm a side sleeper. Yeah, and same. I was worried about it, but you can get like fairly comfortable sleeping on your side, especially if you have a sleeping pad in there.
Mm-hmm.
What I did last time I went was I just had a camp quilt. And then I had a sleeping pad in there. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the quilt gave me better mobility. Cause when a bag, you know, you're already condensed. So it was a very good night's sleep in that bag. I was also very tired, which helps obviously, but
how often do you do stuff in around there? Do you stick mostly in Georgia or do you explore out a little bit?
Camping wise? It's usually in Georgia. I've gone to like national parks, but I always just stay in hotels when I'm out there. Cause I don't want to lug gear across and do all that. But actually, one of my friends just messaged me the other day and asked if he wanted to go. There's a spot in the Appalachian that we just do trips up. We'll spend like a weekend up there. And I think I'm going to do that a couple weekends from now. But it used to be a lot more. And then since all my friends have like graduated, gotten jobs, it's turned into like once every two or three. No, that's a lie. Once every like 5 or 6 months, basically.
Yeah.
Is what it's become, which really sucks because we all enjoy it. It's just no one makes time for it. And I'm the person who usually plans them. And if I'm not saying let's do it, then it doesn't really get done.
Yeah, that's kind of how we ended up camping in the pouring rain because everyone had 2 days off set for it. And it was like, well, either we don't do anything or we go.
Yeah, I mean, you took the time off, right? You better, you might as well just do it.
Yeah.
Nice,
but I went up there. I was up there anyway I did like a magazine release thing at this brewery up there.
Oh, yeah.
So it was kind of like, that's how I forced myself to get up there and then planned a little camping trip around it too, to make it a little more worth it.
Yeah. Talk to me a little bit about the magazine. We haven't even finished Trees. If you'd like to finish talking about this and we can talk about the magazine, that's fine. But
it's up to you.
So. Yeah. Natural segue. Go ahead. Tell me about it.
Yeah,
how the idea happen?
Well, I was when I started getting really interested in magazines. I was obviously on the search for the outdoor magazine that was like I feel like every thing right now has like a cool kind of like artistic, fashionable magazine that goes with it, and so I was like, all right, I got to find the outdoor one, and I was like searching for it and getting all these outdoor magazines and ordering them and going to like the there's like some magazine stores around New York. And I was going and like looking through everything and I couldn't find one that I was like, oh, this is a great outdoor magazine. There's like a couple Japanese ones that are pretty cool. And then I was kind of like, man, I would like to make a magazine, I think. And then I just kind of So I, my like day job, I guess, is I work for photographers. So I'll like photo assist or be like a digitech on photo sets. And from that, I've just like have met a bunch of photographers. And so this first issue of the magazine is kind of like, you just end up sitting around on set talking about stuff. And then you end up meeting people that are also doing outdoor stuff. And everyone who works on these photo sets is like, no one gives a shit about like shooting a bracelet on a white piece of paper, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's not any photographer's passion. It's just how you make money.
Yeah.
And so all these people are like, everyone talks about what they want to do and what they've been doing. And that's what a lot of these articles are, kind of just people that I work for who like do outdoor stuff. And we would just talk, and it's been an idea for a long time of doing this magazine. And then I kind of just started like putting the bug in everyone's ear, like, oh, you should like start putting together something for the magazine, And then I felt like at one point I was like, all right, I've talked about this for so long. There's like no backing out now. I have to actually do it. And then, so there's not much of my stuff in it. Like I have like two photos in it and an interview that I did. And then the rest is all stuff. Like I said, I work upstairs from a photo studio. My sewing stuff is upstairs from a photo studio. So three of the things are from people that I share the photo studio with. And then one of them's another guy that I work with. He's out in Portland, Oregon, Robin Stein. And when he comes to New York, I usually end up working for him. And so, but he's like a real outdoors guy, like a backcountry skier. So he did that article about the avalanche testing, the avalanche pit.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's like a couple other things. I was just reaching out to a lot of people, kind of asking like, oh, do you have any friends that have good stories in the outdoors? Cause I really wanted to put something together that had not like gear reviews, you know, something more substantial, like real stories of the outdoors and less like conquest, not like whatever fastest known time of a route or something like that. Like more just trying to get at the core of reasons why people appreciate nature.
It's beautiful. Well, I think it captured it very well.
Did you get a chance to read through it?
I did. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. My favorite story was the guy. Oh shoot. I forget what town it was.
The Mexico one.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I don't remember the name of the town either, but yeah, that's one. That's one of the people that I share the photo studio with, who I work for too, Reggie. We've been friends for a really long time.
Awesome.
And he's lived in New York for a long time. And when I moved here, I kind of like just started working for him and doing all that. And we see each other pretty much every day. So we just talk about stuff, all this stuff nonstop. And he does a lot of outdoor stuff too. We surf together a lot and go hiking and everything. But that story was really cool.
Yeah. Super. He's, I mean, all the stories are very cool. I love how they're written.
Oh, cool. I'm psyched on how it came out. I think it is worthwhile, hopefully, to be in the world.
I think it is, yeah. Where can people find that if they're interested?
So right now it's all through the same thing as the bag website. So it's just fspoutdoors.com. And yeah, there's just it's called Amateurs. And it's just in the store there, along with a bunch of bags that are mostly sold out now because I've been working on this magazine so much, I haven't had as much time to sew things.
Mm-hmm.
But there'll be bags back in stock soon too.
Good. That's not,
we're not
here.
We're not just making magazines now. There's bags. There's we're bags still. Yeah, we're still sewing.
Nice. Let's shift gears back to the future of trees. You talked a little bit about going up to Maine and doing some canoeing. What are some other things that you'd like to do in the near future or far future?
I don't know. I don't have tons of plans. I'd like to get, before I moved to New York, I used to do quite a bit of outdoor rock climbing and ice climbing and stuff. And I'd like to get back into doing some outdoor climbing in New York, but I just haven't need to like I need people to motivate me, you know?
I
I
understand
haven't
that completely.
quite met the person that's like texting me saying, "Oh, I'll pick you up at 5 a.m. We're going climbing today," you know?
Oh wow. Yeah, no, I don't, I'm not that, but
Yeah.
I got off work. Let's go climbing today,
Yeah, or
guy.
even that. I mean, everything here, the outdoor stuff is like hour and a half or 2 hours from the city, depending on traffic. So it's not super easy. Whereas the beach is a lot easier, and I have a lot more people that text about going to the beach than going climbing. But I would like to get that going a little more. And if there's ice this year, ice climbing is great, but last year
Oh wow.
it was warm and there wasn't much ice here.
Ice climbing. That's pretty intense.
It's less, I mean, I wasn't ever doing like multi-pitch ice climbing. It was always like on top rope, and it's not, I think it's more intimidating maybe than rock climbing, but I don't think it's any more scary. You're still like say on safety, and it's just pretty fun. You're just like out there just hitting ice, you know? Like more barbaric almost. You're just
Oh,
like
definitely is more
swinging
barbaric.
the
Yeah,
axe
just
in and like,
slamming it in as hard as you can and
yeah. But it's fun. So I'd like to do more of that. And my girlfriend's best friend is she's Chilean and she's moving back to Chile. And her and her partner are going to be living like down in the south. And his family like has a hotel in Patagonia. So I might be trying to visit them sometime in January, maybe.
Nice.
So that is pretty exciting because I've definitely never been down there and
Oh, me neither.
looks pretty cool. And it's
It
summer
does.
down there in January.
Oh.
So
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah, opposite
really?
season. Yeah.
That's crazy to think of that something, 'cause I mean, when I think of opposite seasons, I think of like Australia. I don't think of Chile.
Yeah. But so hopefully that happens. And I don't know if we would do anything like intense down there really, but it would just be cool to see everything. But yeah, other than that, the canoe trip in the Adirondacks coming up soon and going to hopefully there was just waves all week down here while I was in Maine. But hopefully there's some waves this summer. I think I was just seeing saw someone post something about it being in, I don't remember which one is good for the East Coast, either El Nino or Nina, but whatever one is good for the East Coast is supposed to be this year. So hopefully there's good waves.
Nice. Well, anyway, before we jump on to the nylon section, I have a little ad read that I'd like to do, if
All
you're
right.
okay with that.
Yeah, of course.
It's going to be
Oh,
interactive, so you're going to be a part of it.
you know what I just realized?
What's that?
Magazine made of trees. So it's very fitting that we talked about the magazine in the tree
It
section.
is. Hey, look at that. Look at that. Subconsciously, we just knew it.
We're doing really good.
We are doing really good. So this is good. This is an ad read we're going to do now. It's going to be interactive, so I'm going to ask you some questions. So anyway, Blair, what is the worst part about camping?
The backpacking meals.
The backpacking meals. See,
Yeah.
that's a good answer, but it is wrong. The
Okay.
correct answer is sleeping on the ground. All right.
All right.
Now, there are some people who don't enjoy sleeping in hammocks. They can't get comfortable. They don't like the swaying, whatever it may be, right? Some people just don't enjoy it. They want to sleep on the ground, but it's just not comfy because they didn't bring the right pad, or it's not inflating or anything like that. So they're kind of sleeping on the ground. Now, you might say buy a new sleeping pad, tough it up, get it a hammock, something like that. But no, what I'm going to present to you today is called the Purple Pad. All right, from the same people that brought you the Purple Mattress, if you're familiar.
Oh
For all the
yeah.
non-Americans, the Purple Mattress is like a Tempur-Pedic, what's it
It's
called? Memory
got
foam type thing.
little squares in it.
It's got little squares in it that you put on top of your mattress to make it more soft and more cozy, hug your body a little bit better so you're getting a good night's sleep, right? The Purple Pad is a new development from Purple Mattress where it's quite the opposite. It's a purple, still purple to keep with the theme, little pad you put on your bed that's full of rocks and twigs and leaves. Okay. And you're going to sleep on that instead. So maybe it's good. You're going camping for 3 days, right? And you're just not sure if you're going to sleep very well. So what you do is you put the purple pad down and you sleep on that for like a week before you're going camping. And you're really, it's going to feel like you're sleeping on the ground, but from the comfort of your own bed. All right. So you'll be able to have that experience. You'll be able to adapt to it and you won't have to worry about sleeping on the ground because you'll be so used to it by that point.
Toughening up the hips.
So go to purplemattress.com, look up the purple pad and use code trees at checkout for 20% off. Thank you for sponsoring the episode, Purple.
All right, I'm in.
Wonderful. Cool. We can move on now to the nylon section. Go ahead. Let me know nylon wise. We can go your personal fashion or we can go FSP, whichever you would like to talk about more in depth, or both. I don't really care.
I don't know that I have much personal fashion to talk about. I'm kind of a work pants, Dickies, and a t-shirt guy.
Okay. Have you always been?
Yeah. Really? Yeah. I've
uniform dresser your whole life?
Yeah, probably about 20 years.
Wow. That's honestly impressive, man.
Well, I'm pretty old, so.
It's impressive.
I've had more time to stretch that out, but I have one pair of pants that I wear every day until
you have one pair of pants right now?
Yeah.
Wow.
And then
how do you just like a Dickies or?
Yeah, they're just right now it's black Dickies, but then sometimes I'll get a green pair.
Oh yeah, mix it up. Yeah.
And so I just wear, usually they last about a year, and then I'll just get a new pair.
That's crazy. I wish I could live like you live. I wish I didn't have this mind virus infecting me.
But I've actually gone through phases where I'm like really hunting for, I'll be like, all right, especially at work and stuff, like when you're working, I don't know, some of the more fashion-y photo sets, people kind of show out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm like, damn, people are going to start noticing that. I've worn the exact same thing for a week straight, and so I'll like always try and find a pair of pants or whatever, but I can never really find anything I like.
So you found the one pair that works.
Yeah, but I'm looking for a new one. So if you have any suggestions of pants that are similar to Dickies but cooler.
I don't know about cooler. I mean, I like Carhartt duck pants. It's kind of the same vein, but they're like double knee and they have like tons of pockets on them.
Yeah.
So I'm a big fan of those. I just bought a pair of Banana Republic chinos.
Really?
Which I'm feeling. Yeah. They have like a stretch material. I might get them hemmed a little bit because they're a little too long. But I've been liking those too because they're not slacks. They're not jeans, but they kind of fit in that in between.
So. All right. I like the sounds of that. I don't think I'm a denim guy. I don't like the restriction.
Mm-hmm. I am the same way.
I need full range of movement.
Yeah. Yeah. I got, last winter, my fiance actually got me these, what are they? Urban Outfitter cargo pants. Cause she had some and I was like, oh, those are sick. So she got me a pair and they're just like this huge parachute pants, basically. They're so baggy, but I like them and I can't wear them in the summer, but they're nice. They're nice for the winter. So I don't know.
That's what just do you wear?
Chew on.
All right. What do you wear when you hike?
Shorts usually, man. Yeah, I just wear shorts when I hike.
I guess that would be my nylon. I just wear like swim trunks, basically.
Yeah.
I have like nylon swim trunks that I wear.
Do you have a brand that you like to wear? Like I like Patagonia baggies.
I like those. And I don't know. I have like Patagonia swim trunks that have like the net inside them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'll wear those sometimes. And then I used to, before the pandemic and stuff, I would go to Japan every year to sell backpacks.
Oh, like that's sick.
I have this guy that like, I did like music stuff for a long time, like touring with a band. So I kind of like met a bunch of people all around the world. And one of my friends who I knew from music was he like knew this guy in Japan and hooked me up with him. And he has this like outdoor brand in Japan that's kind of small. It's called Super Shrub Supply.
Okay. Google it right
and
now.
That's what I have. So every year I would go out there. I would just like, before I moved to New York, I worked doing like catering. So it was really busy in the summertime. And then the rest of the year, it wasn't super busy. So I would just like sew as much stuff as I can. And then I would go to Japan once a year and try and sell it all over there. But that's it would always so cool. be pop-ups with this guy, Yuki, who does Super Shrub Supply. So I have this pair of like tan Super Shrub Supply nylon shorts that I always wear hiking.
That's wonderful, man. That's a beautiful story.
Yeah, it's pretty good. He actually makes some pants that I really want to try on, but every time he says they're too short because I'm tall, and he like makes them like Japanese
yeah,
fit.
Yeah, Japanese sizing.
So he says they're really short, but I kind of like shorter pants, so I got to try and next time he makes a batch of them, I'm going to try and get a pair.
Yeah.
So maybe that'll be my way out of the Dickies.
Yeah, maybe. One pair of hiking pants that I do like, Craghoppers Kiwis. Craghoppers is a UK brand, but they're like trying to expand into the US, taking that heritage and moving it here. I love them.
I'll have to check it out.
Unironically, they did send me a free pair, but unironically, they are my favorite.
So this is another ad we're doing
I've
here.
Ever had. No, this is like a... This is like a
SponCon.
This isn't really a SponCon. This is they sent them to me because I was like I don't have a pair of hiking pants that I really like because I was wearing Arc'teryx Stowe pants. Mm-hmm. Those are too tight. They're not wide enough. And I think the Craghoppers one's like the perfect size for my legs. Yeah. There's just so many pockets in them. I've noticed that they sent me those and then a. Some swim trunks, and even the swim trunks have like a zipper pocket, which I thought
really?
Was really,
that's nice.
I know.
Yeah. What do you, what do you think about the, about Arc'teryx?
I think they make great rain jackets. I enjoy them. I think, besides that, I like the pants. I like the Stowe pants when I wore them. They just, I think I just grew. I mean, I know I grew. I gained like some pounds on me, but they're also like they were thin to begin with, and then baggier became more in style. So I was like, these are too thin anyway. They're still sitting in my closet. Maybe one day I'll break them out again. But
yeah, I feel like you gotta. I've never had any Arc'teryx stuff like anything from it, but I think they put out cool. I think it's cool that they still put out like crazy mountaineering videos and stuff.
Yeah, I do like that. They're dedicated, you know, they know what they're about.
Yeah. And I feel like I could, I guess the reason I don't have it, I just don't want to spend the money on it. But I like people like, I feel like there's always so much shit talk about like, oh, everyone in New York wearing their Arc'teryx and all the memes, like, whatever, you wear your Arc'teryx jacket to go do coke in the bathroom or whatever. But like, I kind of think that New York is crazy and you need crazy outdoor gear because you have to fucking walk everywhere.
Yeah.
Like when I lived in Maine, like where having crazy outdoor gear is acceptable because everyone thinks you live in Maine and you do outdoor stuff. You like literally walk to your car that's in your driveway. And then you drive to work and park it in a parking lot and go straight inside. And if it's like a torrential downpour, you're like basically just inside the whole time.
Yeah.
But in New York, you're just stuck out there. Like no matter what, you got to go to work. It's a torrential downpour. You got to walk 10 minutes to the train. You got to maybe walk 10 minutes from the train to your job. You never know when it's just going to start pouring or be like a blizzard out of nowhere. And I'm like, I'm an Arc'teryx in the city sympathizer.
Yeah. Hey, I understand it. I've never heard that argument for it. I hadn't even thought about it. But if you're walking everywhere, you might as well have a good rain jacket.
Yeah, you never know. And when you have a car living anywhere else, you like, you know, you keep all your stuff in the back of the car.
Yeah.
So like if it starts raining, you just have your rain jacket in the back of your car.
Yeah.
New York, you don't have any storage. You got to like, you're out there. You're like in the elements. So if you don't know what's going to happen during the day, might as well put your Arc'teryx on. Exactly. And then you'll be dry a little bit at least.
It makes sense. Honestly, it doesn't make sense. Yeah. I think the bigger problem with the Arc'teryx wave is like the people in Manchester who are wearing it as like a fashion statement rather than outdoor gear, which I know it rains in England, whatever.
Yeah.
Get over yourself. Grow up.
I mean, I'm sure it's a fashion statement in New York too. Oh,
yeah. I mean, to an extent, it's got to be. It's a popular brand now.
It definitely is. But yeah, that's my take on Arc'teryx in the city, even though I've never actually tried any of it or owned any of it.
Yeah, I think it's great stuff. Like I have the beta rain jacket. It was my first, it was the first rain jacket I bought when I was a grown up. I had this like Patagonia rain jacket I had since I was in like eighth grade and I just wore forever because my mom got it like three sizes too big. And she's like, you'll grow into it.
Yeah, it's not waterproof at all.
Oh God, no, definitely not. That thing went out like crazy. I did not take care of it. Threw it through the wash a couple of times. But yeah, I really enjoy the Arc'teryx one. So, and I think it's of the rain jackets I have, it's definitely the, like if I needed to wear like a suit, I would put that over it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's like the classiest. Formal. Yeah. Oh, sure. Speaking of nylon, not pants, but I did actually buy an expensive puffy jacket last year from Feathered Friends.
Feathered Friends.
It's like a Seattle brand that makes down stuff. It's like very like, I don't know. It's very like expedition gear. But yeah, my girlfriend does like travel nursing and we drove out to Seattle because she did contract out there last year. And I was like, I've been looking at these Feathered Friends jackets for years and I knew in the store they had like a seconds like rack basically of things that had like little factory defects or poked holes in them or whatever. Awesome. So I was like, all right, I got to go to the seconds rack and find a jacket. And then they had one. They didn't have any in my size, but then I just bought one full price anyway. Cause I was like, I'm here already.
You
like,
made
I
it all the way
out. Yeah. I was like, I've been wanting this jacket for like 5 years. They have it in stock. It's like never in stock online. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I got to just get one.
Yeah. So, hey, I don't blame you, man.
That's my, there's some nylon.
There's some nylon. I love it. I love to see it. I'm surprised you didn't get more into the nylon side of things when you went to Japan every year. Because when I went to Japan last year, I took over an empty suitcase and I was like, let's go.
Really?
Yeah.
Nah, I never did much shopping there. Like we would have the, every time I would go, we'd kind of, I try and get people to go. And then we'd like have the pop-up for a couple of days in Tokyo. And then we kind of get out of Tokyo. So I never did much shopping, but what did you get when you went?
I got a lot of stuff. I got a lot of clothes. I don't think I got anything super crazy. What's like something that would impress an artisan?
Were you getting like vintage stuff? They have crazy vintage
stuff there. I got a few pairs of pants. I went through all the vintage shops, but nothing was like speaking to me at the time. Yeah. But I went to like Daikonyama. It's in Tokyo, but it's it's like the Americana vintage sort of area. Like the Capitol store is there, the Visvim store is there, and then there's a ton of thrift shops and like Americana, not even just vintage clothing, but also vintage like pieces of furniture. Or here, one sec. I gotta turn my video off because I didn't put on pants. Give me a sec. This nice little steel tray. I keep my my keys and my wallet in it. But it's this cute little tray that I just got at a store there.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah, man. It's real nice. So there's just a lot of stuff like that that I like to peruse, but I didn't. We bought some stuff. I mean, my fiance bought a Dyson Airwrap because with the dollar being so high and no taxes on it if you bring your passport to the store. She got it for like 60 or 70% off or something crazy.
Whoa. Did you go recently?
I went last year, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't been back in like 3 years and I want to go, but I think now it's would be sick for me to buy stuff there because the yen conversion, but I don't think I would have much luck selling stuff out there.
Because of the yen conversion.
Yeah, it would be so expensive for people to buy stuff. And it might still be okay, but I don't know. I just haven't planned it.
Yeah. Next time I go out, I want to go to Osaka and Kyoto. both those places. So that's my goal.
Yeah, dude, the last time I went, or no, not the last time, 2 times ago, we rented a van and drove around, and we drove like all the way up through the Alps, like through wherever the Olympics was, Nagano. Mm-hmm. Like drove up through the mountains there up to the coast, and then drove all the way down the coast to like these sand dunes called Totori. And we drove like south from there to this little island that had this big mountain on it that we camped on top of, and then drove back. And it was
awesome.
It was probably like a 5 or 6 day trip, but it was so cool. Like seeing the cities, I think, are really cool, and of any cities that are like really special cities in the world.
Yeah.
But the being out in the countryside there is so cool.
Yeah. That's something I didn't get to experience that I'd really like to.
Yeah. I would highly recommend it. And the tolls were expensive for the car, but if you, but renting the car wasn't that expensive, and driving and being able to stop in all these little towns, and just like, I remember every like, you know, like vista points on the side of highways. Like you pull off and there's like a little view. Yeah. So all down the coast, there were these little pull off points, and we like, we're just camping at some of them, and no one fucked with us at all. There's like no one around. We just would throw up tents, but they would all have like, if you walked around it, you would see like a rope tied to the guardrail, and then you could just follow this rope, and it would like, we found like 3 or 4 of these, and it would just lead like down through the woods and then down the cliffs. And you'd like, it like take you out on the cliffs over the ocean.
What?
Just following these like thin little ropes through the woods.
That's so crazy.
It was so cool. And then you'd just be like in these cliffs just on the ocean. It was like, so it was like something you're not expecting it. And it's like, it was a magical experience.
And so did you see any cool like Torrey Gate locations while you're out there as well?
What's that?
The Torii gates are the like the red gates that are just like all over Japan.
Oh, they're like temple things, right?
Yeah.
We didn't see any of those when we were just driving around the countryside, but in like certain, in some of the cities we went through and stuff, we would see.
Sweet.
We would see all those. We drove over. Actually, there's this thing where they have these musical roads.
Really?
So on that trip, the first day we left, I was like, we left right after the pop-up ended. So we were driving out of Tokyo at like 11 o'clock at night or whatever. Hmm. And everyone in the van just fell asleep. And it was me and one other person up front. And we had been like partying. So he was like wasted, and I was the only sober one. We're like driving through the night, trying to get to this first like Airbnb type spot that we booked up in the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
We're like driving through, and it's like 4 in the morning. We're getting close. And we both had been, we kept like pulling over and getting little like green tea bottles. And we're just like, pounding Chugging green them. Tea,
yeah,
like trying to stay awake. And we're driving, and we're like going up this mountain in the middle of nowhere, and then like we hit like a rumble strip, but it's like plays a fucking song. And it, we're like driving over it, we're like looking at each other, we're like, think we're like hallucinating. But then we like looked it up, and I guess there's, I can't remember how many there are, but we were all like obsessed with it after it happened, because it like woke everyone up in the back of the van too. And they were like, what's going on? Why is there music playing?
The end of days.
And and there's, so they're like around the country of Japan on all these random roads, they've like made these rumble strip things, and the rumble strips are like carved out. So when you drive over them, they make a song as you're with your tire going over
them. That's so cool.
And it's like the theme song of different animes.
Oh, wow. I got to Google this.
Yeah, they're called like musical roads. But we, after it happened, everyone was like so obsessed with it. We were like, we got to do another trip through Japan where we like drive on all the musical roads and catalog our adventure. Hopefully no one takes that really good idea.
Yeah, that's a good YouTube series right there.
Yeah, the magical roads of Japan.
They have When You Wish Upon a Star from Pinocchio. The Spirited Away theme song.
Okay.
That's the anime one. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then a lot of traditional Japanese songs, it seems. Pretty cool though. That's very interesting.
We gotta go. You want in?
Yeah.
You can market the trip and blow up our YouTube channel.
Hell yeah, man. Let's do it. I'm in. I'm super in.
All right, done.
Hell yeah. What were we even talking about?
We're talking about
nylon now. Bags, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. How'd you get started making bags?
So I used to travel a lot working for a band, and I was like the tour manager or whatever. So I would like always have a bag because I like held the money and just like had to have crap on me all the time. So I was always like a backpack guy. And when you're just like, we're probably on tour like 6 to 8 months out of the year. So it was just like a lot of traveling. Mm-hmm. So everything you're like, I kind of got obsessed with bags in that time. And like you're living out of bags. And then on this one tour, I would bring like a duffel bag, and I was staying at this house in Maine, like the house that I was living at. And there was a dog there, and I like packed up all my stuff to leave. And then I like had all my shit just laying on the floor and my bag, like packed up, my bag was open. Mm-hmm. And then whatever we like left. And then a day or two later, when I like went to get a change of clothes out of there, I like opened up the bag and it like stunk in there. And I thought the dog had peed inside it.
Yeah.
So I like washed all my clothes and threw the bag away. And then the rest of the tour, I just used like a grocery bag, like a plastic bag.
Yeah.
And then I realized that it was just one of the, like the ink on one of the t-shirts smelled bad. So there wasn't even dog pee in it, but I thought this duffel bag had dog pee all over it. So I left it in Canada, I think. But then whatever, I like got back, and then, it was around Christmas time. So I went up to visit my mom. And I was going to leave on another tour in like a couple weeks. So I was like, oh, I need a new duffel bag. And my mom lives like where I grew up. It's like in the middle of nowhere. So I was like, oh, I asked her if she had a sewing machine, and she like dug this sewing machine out of the basement. And then I drove like 45 minutes to this store that sold fabric. And I like bought fabric and looked up, you know, like WikiHow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course.
So I found this like WikiHow video of how to make a duffel bag. And then I made a duffel bag. And then every time I would go to my mom's house, I would just like, there's nothing to do. So I would just like get her sewing machine out and like make little bags and like tote bags and pouches and little backpacks and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I started doing more sewing. I like worked at a skate shop when I was home between tours. And for the skate shop, we started putting like woven labels on hats. We would like sew them on hats and beanies and stuff to sell.
Mm-hmm.
So then I started doing the same thing for the band, and we would make like, so I had to sew all these tags on. So I kind of got good at sewing from doing that, because we'd make like 300 hats, 500 hats or whatever. And I'd just be like sitting in this basement of this apartment building I lived in, like just sewing little squares around tags all day.
Yeah.
And then we were like doing this tour in Australia, and me and one of the people from the band we like figured out that the like ticket price was the same if we flew directly to Australia or if we flew to Vietnam and then from Vietnam to Australia.
Interesting.
So we were like, oh, we should go to Vietnam for a month before the tour starts. So I was like, all right, let's do it. And then I was like, wanted to make a backpacking bag or whatever, like a,
yeah,
traveling bag. So I like, I don't even know how long it took. It must have taken me like weeks to make this backpack, but I made this like big whatever, like backpacker guy backpack, and for that trip. And then I think that was right around the time that I got, it was in like 2012, because it was, I remember we were stuck in New York during Hurricane Sandy trying to get to Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
And then so it was like right around the time that I got Instagram, I think. And then I think I like posted a picture of the bag on Instagram or something. And then some people, it kind of like, people were like, oh, can you make me a backpack? And then I would just make backpacks for my friends and like whatever, they would just pay me for materials and stuff.
Yeah.
And then another one of my friends who is like a graphic design guy, he was like, oh, I made a logo for you. Now you can like put these tags on your bag and start selling them. So then I was like, oh, I don't know anything about business or whatever. And I was like, oh, great. I'll just have a company now, because I have these little woven labels. So I just, kept making bags. And then it has been a very, I mean, that was, over 10 years ago, I guess, or close to 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it's been a very slow evolution of me figuring out what I'm doing and what I want it to be and what I want it to look like. And now the like fanny packs are the, I always would like travel with a fanny pack. So I wanted to make fanny packs. And that was kind of one of the earlier things that I made that's kind of stuck around. And those are definitely the most popular thing I make, but they're kind of the least technical, I guess. Mm. And as much as it's like, I don't know, I very much struggle trying to figure out what the company is, and but it's an outdoors company, and it's like to encourage people to get outdoors and spend time outdoors, and to make it easier to be outdoors, to have your shit organized easy and whatever. But it's also nice to make stuff that you can use. I mean, people do real, normal people do real adventures, what, like a couple times a year, maybe?
Yeah.
So I've tried to, I always think about trying to make stuff that can be used when you're not like really exploring and on like a real adventure too. So I think that's where the fanny packs, and I make this like lumbar bag thing that's kind of like a bigger sling pack, waist bag type thing that I'll do like day hikes. I usually use that for day hikes instead of a backpack because it's a little more like, feels more mobile. And then, yeah, I think in the, as things progress, my next thing I'm trying to work on is, I've made some like ultralight hiking backpack style things. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm going to try and refine that a little bit and do another release of those because people have been asking for them lately. And then I'm trying to do like an alpine touring bag, like a ski alpine touring bag. That has like avalanche pocket in the front and is like a little more like burly kind of.
Yeah.
So there's this material. The material I use is this stuff called EcoPack mostly. It's like a recycled polyester.
Oh, nice.
Like 3-layer laminate. So it's like a waterproof fabric that is recycled too. And it uses like a less harmful glue. I mean, I think all of that stuff is pretty harmful, but slightly less awful for the environment.
Yeah.
According to their marketing, at least.
Of course.
Well, but there's this other fabric they make that's called Ultra TX. That's like a woven Dyneema fabric that has the 3-layer laminate too. So I'm going to try and start working with that, making this like alpine touring bag too. I need to figure out, I've never used like internal frames before. Mm-hmm. So I got some of these like aluminum stays that I kind of need to figure out how to ergonomically, how to make the backpacks work with that. Cause right now the only bags on my website are like frameless. There's one that's like a day pack, like climbing bag, basically like a, yeah, just like a smaller, I don't know. It's like 20 something liters, but just for like going out climbing for the day, you can haul it up roots and stuff, but it's more of like a day pack thing, but I want to get something a little more like expedition-y going, I guess, and then have some reasons to try and make some cool videos and go out and take some photos, and
that's what it's all about,
try and promote these things if I can figure out how to do that. That's the hard part. Making the stuff is easy. Selling
it's the hard part.
Not so easy.
Well, hey, that's why you're on the Trees and Island podcast.
Right.
Every one of my viewers is going to buy a bag.
We're going to the moon after this.
We're going to the moon. Yeah. It's all uphill from here.
There's a lot of times in the time that I've been doing this, there's been a lot of moments where I have been pitched things that are going to change my life, you know?
Yeah.
And none of them seem to really do anything. But I've got faith.
This isn't a pitch.
I've got faith in Trees and Nylon.
Yeah, I'm just letting you know. It's not even a pitch. It's not an option. Right?
It's just, that's what it is. Yeah. It's all going to be FSP bags and purple mattresses from here on out for all the listeners.
Exactly. I don't know how anyone could resist a purple pad.
I got the tab pulled up right now.
Good. Yeah. Well, yeah. Thank you for holding off until we're finished recording. Very professional of you.
Yeah.
Sweet, man. I mean, you kind of moseyed your way on over to the future of Nylon. Is there anything else you'd like to add about your brand or you for the future of Nylon?
Well, we're still pants shopping.
We're still pants shopping.
So there's that. I've been thinking about, I always think about like being an outdoors brand and then you make like graphic t-shirts or whatever.
Yeah.
And I just print them on cotton t-shirts because I like hiking cotton t-shirts and I'm not like that sweaty.
Okay.
So I just don't really care. And I think the cotton kind of like cools you off when it's wet. But I know that that's a very faux pas thing to
you're in the minority activities. On that one.
Yeah.
Sure.
And I really try and tell people, I mean, it's like, you know, when you're hiking in some place and you like go by some 75-year-old lady that has like a farmer's market t-shirt on and she's just like crushing this hike and you're like, she has like a little like school backpack and like a pole and like probably hasn't drank water on the entire hike and you're like struggling and she's just like, how you doing today? That's what I'm trying to promote with these cotton t-shirts, you know?
Yeah.
Like look at, you could do whatever. But I mean, obviously there's a reason that people wear technical t-shirts and everything.
Because they're snobs, they're pricks, you know? They're not devoted enough to hiking to just wear a cotton t-shirt.
Exactly.
Hey, you're talking to me. I wore Carhartt like workwear t-shirts on hikes for the first like 6 months of hiking. So that's dedication right there.
Yeah. You can, I used to always ice climb in Dickies.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what the normal attire is, but I would assume it's not that.
You just get a little wet, but
you just get a little wet.
Then you go home if you're not.
Yeah.
If you're not in survival situations, I feel like it doesn't really matter what you're wearing.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Well, before we end things off, is there anything that you'd like to ask me?
I don't know. Wait, did we talk about what your next trip is?
Oh, no, I can say that. I don't know what my next trip is. I'm going camping in a couple weeks, probably.
What kind
I guess
of camping?
Next week. Dang. What kind of camping? Just like a car. It's just an overnight trip, but it's going to be backpacking, but it's just one night. So we hike up like 3 miles in the Appalachian. This is a little spot we know. And then just camp out there for the night and drink and eat and then wake up the next morning and go get this really great breakfast that's like on the way back. So good. Just like a small mountain town diner. Yeah.
That's the best food. That's when it tastes the best.
Absolutely, man. And you're hungry because all you had last night was like burgers and hot dogs.
Yeah. That's great. When is like the busy season for thru hikers there?
I couldn't tell you. I don't see a lot of them when I'm up there. Thru hiking in Georgia, I would think it's like...
It must be earlier in the year because everyone starts in Georgia. And when we were just up on that trip that I was on yesterday, we saw like... We probably saw like 5 or 6 thru hikers going through. So they're like getting to the end now, I guess. So they must start early in Georgia. Unless you do it backwards going from Maine to Georgia, then maybe they get down there later in the year. I wonder.
Yeah, I'm trying to Google it right now.
I bet people start in like March or something. How long does the AT take? Right. Like 4 or 5 months?
I think it takes like between 5 to 7.
Jesus.
When do people type with one hand?
When do you start thru hike?
When do people start the AT?
Do you ever look at the fastest known times after you do like a section hike?
No. I don't to you.
It's insane. Yeah. It's just funny. It's like so humiliating. Like that whatever 20-mile thing we just did that took us 2 days and like I don't know how long we're hiking total. At least 15 hours probably. The fastest known time's like 2.5 hours. You're just like, oh, all right.
That's insane. 2.5 hours?
Yeah. I think the fastest known time on the AT is like It's something crazy, like 20 days or something like that. It's all like assisted. So like every, like the guy actually, it happened a couple years ago and the guy got a lot of shit for it because he finished in, he finished on Katahdin, which is like native land in Maine, like very sacred native land. And he like busted open a bottle of champagne at the top.
Yeah.
And everyone was, and he had like a huge crew of people like waiting for him up there. He kind of just like bastardized the place a little bit. And got a lot of shit for it, which I'm sure blew over pretty quick. But yeah, it's something, some ridiculous amount of time. I got to look it up when we get off here because it's like mind-blowing how short it is. But it's just like a, someone who just runs like 100 miles a day for, because I think it's 2,000 miles for the whole AT. So you must go like, I mean, doing 100 miles a day for 20 days seems completely insane, but... I swear it's something short, as short as that.
I could not. My body cannot handle that. To answer your question from earlier, most people start it in March.
Okay. Yeah. So you're good now. You'll be up there all alone.
Yeah. Well, sadly, it is like an actual hike. It's called Preacher's Rock, but it's an actual hike. And then we hike past that to get to our spot. So it is, there's like a popular trailhead that goes to it. Which, you know, it's first come, first serve. We might not get our spot. We got some backups. It's no big deal, but always a struggle. Yeah. Like we show up at noon. If it's like a nice Saturday and we show up at noon, I'm like, we're not getting the spot. It's just not going to happen.
The weekends are hard. It's like, you work like Monday to Friday.
Yeah.
So man, that's the one thing that I really like about doing freelance work. Mm-hmm. And like, I can just work all weekend and then trying to do outdoor stuff. Doing things on the weekdays is like empty and it's so nice. That's a
do not have that luxury, sadly.
Very thankful for that.
Me and then also all my friends too. Like I can take a half day, whatever. It's not a huge deal. But even then it has to be on a Friday because that's when everyone else will have off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you'll be good. There'll be something good. You got backup spots.
I got backup spots. We'll be fine. Do you have any more questions for me?
Nah, I don't think so. It's nice talking to you.
Yeah, man. Shout out one more time your everything.
Yeah, I mean, I hope this magazine thing works out. Mm-hmm. I got to sell a lot of copies of it to break even on it. So
yeah, everyone go buy a copy.
Everyone go buy the magazine. It's like $15 and then $20 after shipping. So if anyone's interested in getting the magazine and international shipping, I can't figure out how to get the international shipping just for the magazine to work right on the website. But if you hit me up on email or Instagram or whatever, I have a method of shipping the magazines internationally with stamps that it'll be like around $10. So not that bad. A lot of great content. What do you think? Like an hour of reading?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So worth it.
I say it's worth it. Yeah, it's very good writing too. And the pictures are very good. It's not just like an hour of vapid nonsense. You know, it's definitely, it's a dense hour for sure.
Well, hopefully we can do it again. Another magazine if this one works out.
Yeah. Looking forward to it.
We'll see.
Sweet. Anything else you'd like to close out on?
I don't think so. Thanks for doing this and all the time.
Yeah, well, thank you for coming on and talking about your company and your magazine and your Dickies.
Dickies might be nylon, actually. They're probably polyester. They're at least a blend.
Yeah. There you go.
Sweet. There it is. Outdoor gear.
Of course. Well, it was awesome to talk to you, man. And I'll talk to you later.
Yeah, keep in touch.
All right.